And welcome to Light Years. We got a special guest today, Jonathan Wasserman, lead draft analyst for Bleacher Report and our go-to guy for all things related to the NBA draft. Now that the tournament's over, figured it'd be a perfect time to catch up with you and kind of see where we're at. So first things first, I want you to make half our fan base cry by saying there's no chance Jalen Suggs lasts a four.
Yeah, that is the first time.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say there's no chance. I mean, I think it's pretty possible, you know, the way the lottery shakes out. Mm-hmm. The chances have probably dropped after the NCAA tournament.
Okay.
But, I mean, I know guys who like Jalen Green, you know, at number two. And clearly Evan Mobley has a top three case as well, and I'm assuming Cade goes one. So it's possible. I mean, I think there's some reluctance to say that Suggs has, like, that superstar potential. I mean, everybody loves, like, you know, his intangibles and how hard he plays. And he's just like a very likable kid.
Right.
But I think that there are some questions about his one elite skill. And so it's possible that he slips to number four.
I guess we don't know if he can shoot, right? Well, I mean, I say we as in me, because I've watched like the tournament and maybe like one other game. And the shot is kind of odd. I mean, it looks nice, but for some reason it doesn't go in. Maybe it's like a Bradley Beal situation in college, but Beal shot well. So I can't figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, he came in, like, before the season started, shooting was going to be one of the big question marks with Suggs.
Mm.
And, you know, you play Gonzaga, and, like, you can kind of just pick and choose your spots of when to take a shot because everybody's so good, and you can really just take what the defense gives up. And so he shot really well on pull-ups this year. I mean, he didn't take a lot of them, but he ranked in the 94th percentile in pull-up shooting per synergy. But he only shot 33% from three, and I think he only took like 3.5 threes a game. So his track record as a shooter isn't, you know, totally convincing, but the eye test sees a kid who can make shots. And he had a couple games where he had one game against Iowa where he had 7 threes. He had a game against BYU where he had 4 threes. I think he had 6 threes over his last 3 games in the NCAA tournament. So he's like, you know, he's streaky when he's confident he can make them, but you know, we don't really have a proven track record of how good of a shooter he really is.
On your most recent big board, the one you put out after the finals, the NCAA tournament, you have him at number two. So you're saying that's still pretty fluid between like 2, 3, 4. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, I've had Suggs at 2 for a couple months now, and you know, nothing happened in the NCAA tournament for me to like suddenly make a drastic change. And honestly, the difference between 2, 3, and 4 is minimal, and depending on who's picking, who I'm picking for, my board may look different. But I just feel so comfortable and confident with Suggs. Like, he can't be bad. Like, you can't take Suggs and screw up. Where I think Mobley has a little bit more, I'm a little bit worried about Mobley's offensive upside and, you know, his skinny, he's 210 pounds, 7 feet tall, and can he add weight? And he had one of the worst rebounding percentages among centers who are projected to go top 5.
God, sounds like James Wiseman.
Little things like that make me question Mobley. But again, you know, I'm nitpicking here.
Jalen Suggs seems like, and that Gonzaga offense looks a lot like Steve Kerr's offense too. Just the way that they make 18 passes against the athletic defense for no reason. And then they get blown out by Baylor, who just makes shots. I guess Jalen Suggs can't bust. I guess he's the one guy. Well, Cade, right? Those are the two guys that I think if you're on the Warriors,
highest floor,
they'd be great fit. Yeah.
I say the only way, like, you know, sometimes I question Cade a little bit just as a number one overall pick. I mean, he's not going to be a bust, like, out of the league type of guy.
Mm.
But the expectations, the bar is going to be so high for Cade. And we've all, including myself, I'm guilty of it, have hyped him up so much that, like, if he's not like an all NBA team player by his second year, people are going to get on him. And so that's the only reason we can use the term bust with Cade, but he's not going to be a bad player.
Like Ben Simmons is the comp that we've seen with it, but Cade can actually shoot. Like, I've only watched a few games, but he looks like he can. I mean, that's an incredible basketball player.
Not quite as athletic though.
Right, right. And so that's the big fear with Caden is I'm doing more like research or whatever. 46% inside the arc is the lowest of any number one pick, like in the last 10 years or something like that. And so, of course, some of that goes to the fact that the spacing wasn't great and he had this monster workload where like every possession ran through him. But still, you know, it's something to look at. 46% on two pointers for the number one overall pick is a tad bit concerning.
Yeah. Let's pivot this to Jalen Green and Jonathan Kuminga. We haven't really had you on since the G League bubble ended. What were your takeaways after that?
Yeah, so I mean, Jalen Green, I think, helped himself. And Kuminga helped himself because nobody really knew what to expect. And, you know, he didn't play for a year before this whole G League thing happened. And before that, he was injured and he sat out and he didn't participate in a lot of events. And so nobody really knew what to expect from him. And, you know, again, the eye test with Kuminga saw a 6'8", 220-pound guy who can create his own shot. He can catch fire. Only end up shooting 24% from three and 63% from the free throw line. So I think it's pretty safe to say that he's not ready to start coming out in the NBA firing threes consistently. But I think in terms of upside, you know, you can make a case that he's got a lot of it. But again, also scouts continue to question his age. And I said this on your podcast last time,
right?
No reason why, but scouts question his age. And that would be a, you know, something to consider. Jalen Green to me has really helped himself and improved his credibility with me and with other scouts. I know scouts again, who have him at two overall. And I think the question with him was the same question I asked about Anthony Edwards: is can an offense efficiently run if it's going through his particular shot selection, which is very pull up happy, you know, loves one-on-one. He loves to take tough shots, but he can really make them. And he scored 30 points in that last game. He was the G League Ignite's top score throughout the season, and he did it pretty efficiently, 46% and 37% from three. And you know, he's not just an athlete, he really improved his ability to create his own shot and his shot making. He had 2 threes a game, and his athleticism is really impossible to match, I think.
Yeah, I watched a handful of their G League games, and it's very hard to compare that to what we saw with Anthony Edwards in college with no shooting around. Like, they're just two different styles of games.
Yeah.
But it seemed to me he's a little more advanced developmentally with his jump shot than what we saw from Anthony Edwards last year. Is that fair to say, or is that just like a product of he's playing at a wide open, you know, the G League's a little more open, a little less defense than, let's say, college basketball?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's closer than maybe the numbers suggest for the reasons that you pointed out. But I feel a little more confident going into their rookie years with Green shooting than I do with Edwards.
Okay. So just to kind of wrap on these guys, it's really going to come down to kind of what team and what they want. It seems to me that Green has the highest upside of the three guys 2 through 5 that we've discussed. So everyone below Cade, would you say that?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
maybe the highest like range of outcomes too.
Yeah, I mean, I could also, if you made a point that Mobley had the highest upside too because of his ability to impact the game defensively, which none of the other guys can do at the same level, although Suggs is a monster defensively. But how much can a guard really impact the game defensively? I think Mobley has a chance to be a little bit more impactful with his rim protection and, you know, ability to block jump shots and guard around the perimeter, but also offensively, if those flashes turn into like regular occurrences. Like if he's hitting threes and he's bringing the ball up in transition and he's facing you up. I mean, one of the craziest stats with Mobley is he was in the 70th percentile as a spot up player. And that was because of not just making jump shots, but he shot like 11 of 15 on pull ups and like 12 of 19 on drives to the basket, which is just like, I look back at some previous centers to see what their,
right,
their spot ups, and like none of them had any possessions, like attacking closeouts. You know, as a 7-footer in college, and Mobley did it a lot, and he was pretty efficient doing it. And so again, like if he gets a little tougher inside, I mean, his offensive ceiling is crazy too.
Is it safe to say he could potentially play the 4 in the NBA like Anthony Davis? Like, I'll use it this way. DeAndre Ayton and James Wiseman are hyper athletic bigs, but no one in their right mind would ever play them at the 4. Could Mobley be a guy who actually has that versatility in a way that Anthony Davis does?
I don't think he'd kill you if he played the 4. Like, it could work in stretches, and like, you know, Minnesota right now is projected to pick top 3. They'll keep their pick if it's that high. And I got to think, would they take Mobley and try and play like Towns and Mobley at the 4? And, you know, it's not ideal, but could you make a case that it could work? I mean, he would obviously need to become a better shooter. But he's got nice touch. I mean, if you just like look at him take jump shots, he was very good in the mid range, and he made 11 threes, and that's more than most centers make as one and done freshmen that are projected to go high. So it's possible, like it could work, but obviously it's not ideal.
But he's like, he's projected as a center. That's like what most, okay.
Yeah, because like he's not,
because he is so skinny. He, in some ways, he looks like he has like a Kevin Durant frame to him and that sort of thing, which is why I'm like wondering, maybe he is just kind of a, you know.
Yeah, and that's the big fear with him. But he's not as like fluid with his ball skills as Anthony Davis. Like I don't see an Anthony Davis type score.
What a help Warriors fans out and me too. What's the difference between Evan Mobley and James Wiseman?
You got how much time do we have here?
I know there's a big difference.
we can go as long as you're willing to go.
No, I mean, like, you know, Wiseman is the more, I mean, I guess, listen, you guys have seen more Wiseman this year than I have, particularly lately, because I've been locked into the tournament. But Wiseman is more physically imposing, you know, around the basket. And Mobley is bigger, broader shoulders. You know, he should be a much better rebounder and finisher. I guess his hands aren't as good as Mobley's, I would say. And Mobley is just away from the basket, he's just more believable. Like the reason why Wiseman went so high in the draft is because everyone bought into the highlights. And he's got some amazing highlights of him like doing some crazy things facing up in the open floor. But like that rarely happened. It happens a lot more with Mobley, and the flashes are just more believable in terms of, you know, can they translate?
Got it. Andy literally took, that was going to be my question, to kind of compare him to James Wiseman. So would you say, he has better hands, he has better overall touch, there's more belief that he can be a credible three-point threat over time than James Wiseman? I mean, I think Wiseman can hit threes, but
yeah.
I would be surprised if he, you know, turns into a 40% on volume three-point shooter.
Like, I don't, and you guys can tell me, like, how many times has Wiseman caught the ball around the arc and put it on the floor and made a move? Has that happened much?
It's been
it's a turnover.
It's been effective in transition only, really. Right. Yeah, like if he's running in transition, he gets it, and he sees something that looks Giannis-esque in transition, but in the half court, not so much.
I think part of that, and this is why I want to bring it back to Jalen Green, actually. I think part of that, Jonathan, is that it's kind of how James Wiseman is being used, right? Like, he doesn't even make those plays in transition anymore. That was like the first month of the season, and he doesn't shoot threes anymore. That was the first month of the season, because I don't think he's allowed to, right? He's doing back to the basket stuff, which, I mean, you tell me if that's his strength or not. We don't think so. But he's doing back to the basket stuff, and he doesn't really have a great feel for the game. So Jalen Green is the question that I have. Like, he seems athletic. He seems like he can score. He seems like he's got a wide range of outcomes. Is the Warriors a good landing spot for him, though, if the Warriors do end up with Jalen Green at 4 or 5? Because I don't know if it is. I'd almost rather get the safe option, and I think they would too, because I don't know if they're the right team to kind of let Jalen Green flourish, allow him to flourish.
Yeah, I mean, he probably, Golden State wouldn't be the ideal team. I mean, and with all these prospects, usually Golden State's high in the list of like
of
favorable destinations to land.
Sure.
Because you got talent around you and, you know, an established roster there. But Green is also like, I can't picture him going to a team and not getting constant touches. I mean, he's so used to being the number one guy, and he was the number one guy in the Ignite team. And like, if he had to be a spot up player for a while, like, I don't know how that would affect his rhythm and his confidence. And he's a guy who, like, you know, he catches fire and he starts, you know, pumping in shots, and it would kind of disrupt his rhythm if he went to a team where he got the ball once every, you know, six possessions.
In other words, you don't really want to put him in a box. You kind of want to let him go and develop him that way, if all things are equal.
Yeah, I mean, like all these prospects, you want to have a good balance between not having too heavy of a workload, but not going, you know, not standing around the arc waiting for your chance. Like, you know, I'm in New York and I'm watching Obi Toppin just stand around the arc and it's painful to watch, because that was never his game. And like, how can he build any confidence if it's like, well, I hope I get the ball, you know, this quarter? You know, there's no rhythm to build. How do you build confidence that way? And Green, for a guy, it would just be such a major adjustment going to a team like that. And maybe it'll work long-term, like it did with Jason Tatum. But But yeah, ideally he goes to a team where he gets a little more on-ball use.
Anyone outside of that top five group play themselves into conversation to be there?
I can't see the top five changing. I mean, is that what you're asking?
Yeah. I'm asking, the tournament's over. Has anyone, Keon Johnson, Scotty Barnes? I mean, we can run down the names. You know them all. Any of these guys have a shot at getting into the top five?
I can't see it, just because nobody is really, there's clearly a gap between five and six. And are those going to be the five best guys from this draft, like in a couple of years?
Probably
like,
not.
History says no, but saying right now, who's going to be the guy who surprises everybody? It's hard to have any confidence in Keon Johnson, who is, 19 years old and really didn't show any creation or shooting this year, suddenly blowing up. And maybe he could, but to bet on that would be pretty crazy. So I think the top five is pretty set. And then at number six, it's just like a whole sloppy group of guys where I think you're doing a lot of guessing.
I guess the Warriors are going to have a top 14 pick, which is probably where we should transition this. And I'm looking at some of the names and some of the guys that I watch in the tournament. It feels like Corey Kispert at 19 could be like the seventh pick. Is that fair? So really any of these guys could be a Warrior.
Yeah. I mean, there's to say that there's like a, it's, yeah. The guy, Kispert could go 7, he could go 14. You could say that about every one of these guys in that same tier. Who they're looking at, again, we're guessing this early.
So would you say there's not a lot of value then in, or there's not a difference in value between having like the 10th pick and the 14th pick in this year? It seems like that whole range, like 8 to 12, it's like the same caliber of player, and it's down to if you know how to scout.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you have a pick, I think once you get to number six, like you're like, shit, I might as well just trade down.
Got it. Okay. So right now the Warriors are locked in at number 13. It's going to be somewhere between 11 and 15 where that pick conveys. 13 is probably where it's going to convey. Who among these players, we got this question. I like this question.
Besides Scotty Barnes.
Yeah. Assuming Warriors land their own pick in the 10 to 15 range, who is the Tyrese Halliburton type of guy this year who will be available in that range and can actually contribute immediately?
All right, let's see. Let's go down the list here. I mean, like,
everyone's going to say Davion Mitchell after the tournament, right?
After they watched what we watched.
Yeah, and he's probably going to go that high. He may not even be there at 13, honestly. Right. And, history says that that's not going to be a great pick if you take him top 10, just based on the amount. He's going to be a 23-year-old rookie.
Cool. And
I don't think the Warriors
love that. No.
There are no all-stars who've been drafted at his age that have made it all-star teams, at least not in the last decade. So, is he a bad pick? No, I think he's got like a high floor, and you kind of, with Mitchell, I'm kind of picturing like maybe a little better offensive minded Marcus Smart type of player, where he's going to make his money with defense and energy. And he's probably a little bit sharper in terms of playmaking and shot making,
which by the way, would be an amazing return at 13. You look at usually like you don't find players of that caliber outside of the top 10 usually.
Right. I think people kind of saw Mitchell in the tournament, and they saw like the explosiveness and the shot making and kind of started to picture like
Donovan Mitchell.
A Donovan Mitchell. And I think that's not really accurate, particularly just given he wasn't like that great until this year, until he turned 22 and a half. And he still shot 65% from the free throw line. So I'm a little bit skeptical.
Oh, perfect. Perfect.
Perfect. Like Warrior. You can bank on him being a tough ass defender who's going to play hard. And so that's something you can see translating. But in terms of like him being a star point guard, I'm not buying it. But you asked about who's Halliburton. Like, I don't know.
Tyrese Halliburton clearly is the player who, outside of like LaMelo Ball's, hit the ground running. Clearly a player should have gone higher probably. Who's going to be the player in that range who's most likely to contribute immediately?
I like Franz Wagner from Michigan, who had that brutal game to close.
Against UCLA? Yeah.
Yeah, that was probably the worst game of his career. And his career is long. It's not just 2 years at Michigan. It's like he played years overseas too. He's got unbelievable experience for a night. He's still 19 years old and he's finishing his sophomore year. And he's a guy who I think the Warriors should target. I'm hearing he's over 6'9" now, and he does a little bit of everything, and a very, very good defender at 6'9" and just an easy fit. And one of those really high floor guys, and very competitive. I like Wagner a lot.
That makes so much sense. Does he pass? Does he pass out of the pinch post? Does he set good screens? Does he?
I mean, the numbers don't jump out at you, but he was a very good pick and roll passer. He only shot 34% from three, but 83% from the line back to back years, and had a lot of games. I think he had 12 games where he made multiple threes. And again, 19 years old with his shooting stroke, you expect that he'll be a good enough 3-point shooter. And between the shooting, the secondary playmaking, an animal defensively, number three in the country in defensive box plus minus this year at 19, it's like impossible for him to not be a serviceable, good rotation player.
No.
Couple of questions here on Zaire Williams. Obviously, he went to Stanford. Had him, was it 15?
15.
Or 15. Number 15. So he's right in play for that Warriors pick. What I saw from him this year was a player who's a few years away. Your thoughts on Zaire Williams?
So Williams, you know, came out of Sierra Canyon. Everybody knew him. Just looking at him, he's like 6'9" and has a beautiful shooting stroke. Forget what the numbers say. And no scouts even really paying attention to the numbers because he didn't play too many games.
Right.
And, you know, we think about 20 games at 18, 19 years old, like 10 years from now, who cares? It's kind of meaningless. He has a very good looking stroke, and he is a very good, he's good with the ball in his hands. He may not have explosiveness to get to the rim, but, you know, he had a triple-double this season. And I think he's going to be a guy who at 6'8" can run pick and rolls, pass out of pick and rolls. He's very good creating his own shot around the perimeter. The big thing with him is he can't really get to the basket that much. He lacks explosiveness. He struggles with contact. But I think you can easily project him as a shooter who defends both the three and four and can make good decisions handling the ball in ball screen situations. And I think to get him in the mid first round would be good value. And I think he's like a very good buy low pick based on the season that he had.
In this 10 to 20 range, you have a lot of ball handlers, combo guards. I'm not really sure if Jaden Springer's a point guard or same with Davion Mitchell, all down the list. The Warriors definitely need a backup point guard, maybe a third guard, someone who can play with and without Steph. Which of these guys would you like best for them if it worked out for them?
I mean, the guy that you just described is Jared Butler, who you watched in the
NCAA
tournament. All year. I mean, he played with David and Mitchell, so he's got experience playing on and off the ball. Both those guys average 5 assists per game.
Does he defend?
He's much improved defensively. And, you know, is he going to be like a plus defender, an asset to your defense? I don't know, but I don't think he's going to be a liability out there. Had a monster steal, over 3% steal rate this year, I think, which is a good sign. And he definitely improved on defense, like in just terms of making reads and anticipating, but one of the best shooters in the draft. And I think
there we go.
Very good shooter on and off the ball, a great pull-up shooter, a great spot-up shooter. And I think the big question with him is athleticism and how much will it affect his ability to separate inside the arc and blow by guys. But he's an A-plus ball handler. Who averaged over 5 assists, was a very versatile shooter, an improved defender. He's a junior who just won the national championship, was the best player on the best team in the country. And everybody raves about his character, a very mature kid. Another guy who is just like an easy fit, a total pro, just may not have that like exciting upside to him.
It sounds like either the Baylor guards would be an ideal outcome for the Warriors at like that 12, 13, 14 pick.
Yeah, I think they're both easy fits, particularly for a team who's looking to compete.
Slot him right next to Jordan Poole because we know he doesn't play defense, nor does Steve want to play him at the one. So that makes sense. I think that's really like those are the ones that make sense, Jonathan, right, for the Warriors where they can't – I don't know if Zaire Williams, he seems like a project. They just can't take a project. Whether that be the right move or not, they just can't. And if they take a project, I'm not sure they're confident or we're confident that they could turn that project into a star player, which it seems like Zaire has that potential.
Right. But I guess that would be the argument that they that they don't have the minutes to let him develop.
That's true.
At the same time, you know, how many rookies are going to come in and move the needle for Golden State next year? Like at 13, like not many, unless you get really lucky.
Yeah,
like,
that's
my thing. Is like, I'd rather just
older guys who like maybe could come in and be an eighth man off the bench.
That's it. Like Kispert, like just throw him out there and just have him shoot threes. Like that's the name I keep coming back to. Like maybe he doesn't play defense. Maybe he can't get a shot off because he's not that. Whatever, right? Whatever his weaknesses are. But like, they need some guys who can shoot the ball, and maybe he can just come in and just. I mean, even Jordan Poole, like he can shoot, but not really. Like Kispert seems to me like he's 38-40% right off the bat, and for the rest of his career, which is incredible. They need that.
And if you're willing to lower the bar in terms of upside and just settle on that, on the specialist, which is what you need to plug a hole, then yeah, Kispert's a nice option.
Or Duarte, that Oregon kid had some wiggle. I watched him, but like, but then that's another guy you'd have to have him just have the ball all the time. I mean, just off the three games that I watched.
Duarte's 24 years old. He's
really
perfect. I did not realize he was perfect. That old. Does he wear a suit and tie? Yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah, so he's like,
God, he's 24. That's crazy.
Yeah, or he'll be 24 before the draft. I forget exactly what month, but yeah, he's a guy who played himself into the first round this year, former JUCO player of the year.
Wow. Couple Kuminga questions here. I forgot to ask this to you earlier from Nate Mosby. He's asking, how much of a project is he considering the shooting numbers that we saw in the bubble? So he clearly saw that.
He's going to be like, depending on what team he goes to, like if he goes to a bad team, he's going to be productive, but he's going to shoot below 40% from the field. So it really kind of depends. And then if he goes to a good team, you know, he's always been a guy, and the big knock on Kuminga is like, he's a catch and hold guy where four guys stand around and watch him while he decides what move he wants to make. And he's not really, you know, he doesn't have that cliche makes teammates better on a scouting report. So it really depends what situation he goes to. Yes, he could be productive as a rookie, but is he going to be like an effective, efficient player to help your team win? Probably not.
The one thing that stood out to me in the bubble, which, and I'll be honest, I hadn't seen much of him, just like everyone else, better passer than I thought. Did you get that too? Or did you think that was more just kind of like he was looking to put it on film that he could do stuff?
So it's you know, when you're evaluating guys, like, yeah, he made some highlight reel passes. And I probably know exactly which passes you're thinking. And some of them were like really nice. And you're like, oh, wow, he could be a secondary playmaker. And then he'd go like three games without an assist. So can he make the good passes? Yeah, he can. But, you know, is his head always going to be looking to make them? You know, probably not.
Sure. Okay. I got one last guy and then we'll get out of here. Appreciate your time as always, Jonathan. Yeah. Moses Moody, you have him slotted at 12. Feel like the tournament kind of knocked him out of the top, being in that like 6, 7, 8 range. I mean, you never know. Next thing, we could get a nice video of him hitting 80 open threes in a gym or something. But what do you think about him as a potential fit for the Warriors and kind of what he is as a player?
Yeah, I mean, he's the Devin Vassell of last year's draft. He's like the typical 3-and-D guy. And he's an easy fit anywhere. I think as long as you're willing to, kind of like Kispert, accept the fact that he may not have that superstar upside, then he's a good pick really anywhere in that 6-12 range. And no, stock shouldn't have dropped based on two bad games in the NCAA tournament. He came into the tournament with 28 points in 3 or 4 games. He was consistent all year. He averaged 16 points with really no isolation or pick and roll possessions all season, totally within the flow of the offense. Everything was spot ups or transition or offensive rebounds, just got himself buckets without needing dribbles. He's an easy fit. He's 6'6", over 2 threes a game, good free throw shooter, good pull up shooter, just not very creative with the ball. But again, like I said before, if you can accept the fact that he's not going to go out there and, you know, be an end of clock guy, and somebody who will just spread the floor and play within the offense and make shots and defend his position, then he's a good pick anywhere in the lottery or second half of the lottery.
Nice. Okay. Jonathan, we appreciate your time. You got anything you want to plug?
No. Same as always.
Warriors fans know where to go because we're gonna do this every year until Steph retires. We go right back to the lottery, baby.